And welcome to today's podcast, where we invite our guests to bear all and spill the tea. Today's Spill the Tea podcast is brought to you by me, Casey, and my co-host, Andrea, from All Saints Academy. We are also joined by students Charlie and Apple from Dean Close School. Joining us today, we have the brilliant and inspirational LGBTQ activist, Rachel Bergin. Rachel has been a part of the LGBTQ Plus partnership since its creation and facilitates a monthly LGBTQ reading group, which is almost 6 years old now. Rachel also writes LGBTQ poetry, which has been published in various anthologies funded by the Arts Council. Rachel left school without any GCSEs, but went back to university late in life and has a 2-1 from university. Due to COVID, she is still waiting to have a graduation ceremony. She is passionate about how literature can bring different communities together. She recently spoke at Pitfield School on Section 28 and the more recent protest against LGBTQ literature in Birmingham in 2019 in order to spread awareness of our history.
So Rachel, despite leaving school with no GCSEs, what motivated you to go back into education and get your degree? Was there anything that was particularly challenging?
So firstly, hello everyone. Hello Casey, hello Andrew, hello Charlie, hello Apple. I'm so happy to be here today. So thank you very much for inviting me. I've got my manners still. So yeah, what motivated me to go back, and was there anything particularly challenging? So yes, it was really challenging leaving school with no GCSEs. I know that after having that quick chat with you that two of you are going to be doing the GCSEs and two of you have now finished. Well done and good luck. It's very challenging trying to go through life not having any, and obviously not having A-levels, because they tend to go hand in hand. However, I never lost my desire to learn and I didn't give up because I love education, I'm passionate about it, and especially love reading. And I actually was sat on the bus going to work and I picked up the metro and I saw there was a degree at the University of Bristol, picked it up, ummed and ahed about it, applied, went for my interview and managed to get a spot. And yeah, the rest is history. So what I will say is I went as a Mitchell student. You can go back to any university as a Mitchell student with no GCSEs and no A-levels. But it was really hard because I went back at 29 and I did a part-time degree. So it was 6 years rather than three. And I worked full-time to fund myself. So obviously, I'm assuming that a lot of the viewers are young and maybe just finishing the GCSEs and going on to A-level. I hope this story gives you like a bit of hope and it doesn't make you think, oh my God, if I fail at my GCSEs or if I don't do well with my A-levels, if I can't get into that university, what will I do? Please don't worry. Obviously, do your best. But there's always a second chance. You can always go back as a mature student. It might be a bit later. It might take a bit longer. But I just hope that, you know, motivates you. I'm not saying don't try because you can just go back because it is hard. It's really hard. But yeah, I hope that gives you a bit of comfort because it can be really stressful going through all that.
So what happened? Why didn't you finish school? What came up in your life? What kind of situation? Any circumstances or...
So yeah, I think this topic's really prudent actually. So I actually left school due to bullying. I went to school in Spain and I was 12 years old when I decided not to go. Now that, just for listeners, that is illegal. So you can't just decide at 12 to not go to school if anyone is 12 thinking, ah, brilliant, tomorrow I just won't pack my bag and go. But it was actually really bad bullying that made me leave. I was the only English child in a class of Spanish kids and it was just a bullying situation. So again, what I would say to you, if there's anyone being picked on or bullied for maybe not being local or not part of the country that we're living in, you know, don't give them a hard time because it can cause people to drop out or not do well in their education, and that has impacts down the line. So yeah, that's why I left.
Oh, I'm so sorry, but moving on.
yes, let's move on.
Moving
all
on.
Fine now.
Keeping up. Lighter note. Could you tell us a little bit about what the LGBTQ+ partnership does in the community?
Yes, I certainly can. So when I was 19 years old, I moved to Cheltenham to start a new life. And at 19, I looked around me and I thought, well, I love reading. And I'm pretty sure I'm part of the LGBTQ community, which I'm still stumbling over because it's getting longer and longer by the minute. But there was nothing really for me. I didn't want to go clubbing. I'm not a clubber. And I'm a bookworm. And I ummed and ahed, and I went to my local library at the time, which no one goes to libraries anymore, I don't think. But they actually had a stand of lesbian and gay literature at the time, which is amazing. This is 2005. So the fact that Cheltenham Library had a huge stand blew my mind as a 19-year-old. And I got very excited, grabbed all the books, ran to the librarian, flung them down, and then felt really shy because I was only 19. And I thought, is she going to judge me? But she didn't. Anyway, years later, I met with this amazing woman called Lily Rowe, who I think worked for Cheltenham Borough Council at the time. And we decided to set up the LGBTQ partnership. That was a long time ago. That was nearly 7 years ago. It's now grown. It's really big. We have lots of different things. So I run a monthly reading group, which I think you're probably going to ask me about. But there's club nights, and the partnership also work with various other agencies within Gloucestershire. NHS, County Council, University of Gloucestershire, and we try and give guidance on different things. So and check out the website. There's loads of information on the website, so have a look.
Thank you. Are there any books you would recommend to us, or any LGBTQ books that you'd recommend?
So I'm always really mindful of intersectionality, and we always need to understand that there are Black queer people, there are brown queer people. You know, we need to expand our minds. So my current list, and the list that I always choose, I always try and include Black queer authors and Asian queer authors. It's very important to me. A few that I'd recommend are Juliet Takes a Breath. That's a very good book about a young girl growing up queer in America. There's an amazing poet called Jackie Kay. She is mixed race. She was a Scottish poet laureate. And her father, I'm going to get the country wrong, so I'm not going to say it because I don't want to get it wrong, but she's a very good poet. And Giovanni's Room by James Baldwin, very famous Black author, and the book is beautiful. It's also really short, so if you're pushed for time, you can probably read it in a weekend. And there's some recommendations there.
So about the community, I'm curious about where is it and how can we sign up to join activities in that?
So the LGBTQ partnership, it's basically a website, and loads of people make it happen. So it's not one person. It's formed by loads of different people. I would say be grassroots. If you see that there's a gap anywhere, either do it yourself or check on the partnership and see who's doing something similar. So if you think, oh, you know what, it's really underrepresented, in that area, check the partnership. If there's nothing like it, it might be something that you want to do yourself. The community has to keep evolving, and we certainly need more young people in the community pushing things forward for things, for real community things, where people actually meet face-to-face, that kind of stuff. Because at the moment, most things happen online, and it'd be really good to change that, because face-to-face is still really important.
Thank you.
Also, what piece of advice would you give someone who is struggling to come out in today's society?
I think it's still really, really hard. I know we have the internet now, so you can find your people really quickly. We've got, like, you know, gay TikTok, and there's just lots going on. But it's still really, really hard, because it's almost telling your parents is super hard, right? Sometimes you can tell your friends, and your friends get it. It might be that your parents don't get it, or you might worry that your grandparents don't get it. Or it might be that you're living somewhere where, if you come out, they may ask you to leave home. So, for instance, LGBTQ plus people are more likely to be homeless because people tend to boot them out, which is really sad. My piece of advice is, if you do come out, make sure you're in a safe family to do so, that you're at no risk of homelessness and no risk of harm. That is the one thing I would say. And also, it's never as bad as you think, but just make sure that you really can trust the person that you come out to. And just be aware that once it's out, it's out. Especially with social media, and news flies around pretty fast these days. So just be prepared. And yeah, it's really hard to advise anyone, because I told my mum when I was 11 that I thought I liked girls, and my mum was cool with it. So that was great for me. So I don't have like a story that I can say, well, oh, this was awful. That wasn't my experience. But I do know other people who told their parents when they were 11 and 12 or older and had quite negative experiences. So everyone is really different. So just because my experience was really positive and, you know, I'm very lucky, other people aren't as fortunate as me. So, yeah.
I think there's a problem of awareness in public here. So has the community done anything about raising up awareness in public to, like, teach people about LGBTQ?
I think schools have a huge responsibility. And I think if we think about when do we first have feelings for people that we might, like, have crushes on, I think people, like, children as young as, I don't know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, we start thinking, oh, I might like that person. Just, I might like them. And I think if we just have people talking about it more openly, really early on in schools, even if it's not okay at home, at least schools are doing something to say that it's okay. And I think culturally that would help shift things around. But I know that's not possible everywhere. And again, the internet is where people tend to go to find out all their information. So just knowing which websites are the good ones and which are a bit, you know, sketchy.
Thank you.
So now, when did you start writing poetry and what inspired you?
I started writing poetry probably around age 6 and 7 years old. I've always loved poetry. And then I left it. I didn't write any poetry when I went to Spanish school. I didn't write any poetry in my teenage years. I started writing again when I was 19 and carried it on. And then during lockdown, during COVID-19, I found this amazing group of LGBTQ plus writers. And we meet every Saturday and we write together. And that's the work that was then published. And we actually spoke at Cheltenham Literature Festival last year, where we got to read out our poetry, which was absolutely amazing. So thank you to them for letting us perform. Yeah, I think I've answered your question. What inspired me? Words inspire me. Experiences inspire me. Narrative, community. Someone's soul is bared when they write a poem. It's not like writing a book. It feels a lot rawer. And there's no constraints to a poem. There's constraints to a story. There's grammar. A poem can just be raw emotions thrown on a page. You don't have to worry about it. And there's no judgment. There's different poetic forms. But you can throw it all out the window. It's accessible. Even if you don't have a GCSE, you can still write a poem, you know. There's no kind of test. Oh, you can't be a poet unless you can do this, 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 this. So it's one of the most accessible forms of writing that I've come across as well. And it can be verbal. It doesn't have to be written. You can be a beat poet. You can stand up. You can do performance poetry. So it's really versatile.
Mm. What's a beautiful gift that you have, which is amazing.
Wow. I'm okay.
We were just wondering, where can we read your poetry? Because we think it would be very inspirational to read what you've written.
So my most recent works are published in an anthology called Soft Lads by Oliver Bliss. It's amazing. It's a set of authors. I'm one of them. And it's our responses to some tapestries that look at queer masculinity. So it's 5 tapestries. It's a very beautiful book. The pictures are inside the book as well. So you get to see the tapestries. And it's our raw responses to viewing this artwork. And that's called Soft Lads. So if you really, really want to have a look, and there's loads of other queer authors in there too, it's not just me, it's an anthology. So it's really worth having a look at. In fact, ask the school, tell them to get it in. I'm sure they can do that, I think. And then you can all read some queer poetry and then maybe invite some of the poets back to do readings. The possibilities are endless. There you go. Shameless plug.
Thank you.
What is your biggest challenge when working with the LGBTQ plus partnership? What have you faced?
That's a juicy question. So I wouldn't say it's a challenge. I just think it would be brilliant if there were some more grassroots people working. When I say grassroots, what I mean is the partnership is formed by heavy hitters. So the University of Gloucestershire, Gloucestershire County Council. A lot of people that go to the meetings, it's actually part of their day job to go because it's part of their job role to engage. What I would love is for maybe more people like me to run events in the evening so that if people are working, they can actually still attend. So I run my reading group. It's in the evenings. You know, I'm trying to be flexible with it. I flex around my members. And it's just something that I've created within the community. And I'd love to see some more people coming forward and saying, you know what, I'm going to start this group on this evening, or I'm going to do this on a Saturday or a Sunday. Just because a lot of the time, if people are working and it's not their full-time jobs, they won't be able to get as involved as they'd like to. That's probably the biggest challenge. But to be fair, everyone's lovely. I don't really have anything bad to say about anyone. Just more people. We need more people doing things.
Yeah.
So what do you think you can do as a school or as a member of the school to help with the LGBTQ plus community?
As a member of the school?
Yeah.
That's an interesting question. So this is probably, I don't know how much we can delve into this, but relationship and sex education is really important. Mm. So obviously, having left school at age 12 in a Spanish school, I didn't have any relationship and sex education. And I think it's really important to talk to younger years just about relationships. I'm not talking about sex here. I'm just talking about relationships. And I'm talking about introducing younger children to the concept of that relationships could be a man and a woman. It could be two men, so it could be that you have two dads, you could have two mums, you know, just opening their eyes to the different kinds of relationships that people can have without worrying people. People worry a lot about relationship and sex education, and we need to just stop people worrying. It's just opening people's eyes to the different people in modern day society and complying with the law in this country where it is legal. Let's enjoy our rights, you know, the laws protect us, so let's enjoy the rights, because there are other countries where no school is allowed to talk about LGBTQ plus stuff. It is illegal. So let's enjoy the rights in this country and talk about it.
Just normalise it even more.
Let's normalise it.
Definitely.
Please.
What has been your most memorable moment working in with the partnership?
To be honest, I've been working with them for so many years. I do just think it's my reading group. It's not a... It's just the whole experience of working with the partnership. I don't have one moment that stands out. It's just being part of something, seeing it grow, and just being present for the community has been wonderful. I don't have like one amazing standout moment, but it has led me to some awesome things. Like, this is a pretty memorable moment right now, this podcast. I'm not going to forget this in a hurry. So, you know, it leads to lovely things like this. So that is really valuable, I think.
Now, we really wouldn't be spilling the tea properly if we didn't ask you some gritty questions at the end to find out the stuff that our listeners really want to know. At the end of all our podcasts, we are asking our final thirsty three questions to really juice things up for our listeners. Our guests haven't been sent these final three questions, so now is our chance to really get to know them.
So, first up, what's the most outrageous thing that you have done in your life so far?
So, I wouldn't say I'm the most outrageous person you'll ever meet, but after talking to you all and reflecting on what I said, maybe the most outrageous thing was leaving school at 12.
definitely brave.
Maybe that was actually the most outrageous thing that I could think that I've ever done as a 12-year-old. But when you're 12, you don't always think about the future. You just go by your heart more than anything. I'm not very outrageous. I wish I was. But I don't think I think I'm mostly quite well behaved, unless there's any other outrageous thing you wanted to ask me about that you might think I've done. I don't know.
Looking back on your life, if you had to thank one person, whether you know them or not, that is at the centre of everything that you've done, and that is your ultimate inspiration, who is that and why?
I don't have one person, but I think I just like to thank all the authors, whether they be dead or alive, that inspired me as a young girl to not give up on literature, because literature, reading, education go hand in hand. You don't seem to have one without the other. So without these authors that really inspired me as a young kid, I don't know where I'd be. If I hadn't developed my love of reading, I don't know what I'd done. And I couldn't have done that if there hadn't have been all these authors open to me. And also my mum, which is cheesy, but she let me read well above my age group. So I know that they categorise books now into like young adult, and they have age appropriate stuff on it on every book. I think they do. I think they might do, maybe.
Yeah.
My mum let me read anything. She'd walk me into a bookshop and say, you just choose whatever. So I would just pick any old thing. And I think that really helped expand my mind from an early age. So I would say that, you know, if you're reading just one genre or you're reading for your required reading age, I don't know if that's a thing here, expand it. Read everything. Read banned books. Go for it. Because that's how you can open your mind and learn about different communities. Don't just read what you think you need to read. I know it's hard when you're studying because you have that giant reading list, I'm assuming, that you have to follow. So it is tricky, but yeah.
Mm. Would you say those books sort of helped you through those more isolated years when you left school?
Yeah, all I did was read. When I came to Cheltenham to start my life again, I went to the local library and I got out books. And while I was looking for jobs, job hunting, which is really hard when you have no GCSEs and A-levels, I spent a lot of my time in the local library reading and reading and reading. And I would say in those early years when I didn't have any money as well, getting those free books from the library really saved me. In fact, if I could compare the library to almost like a church-like experience, that library saved me because I could read and gain that knowledge into my mind. I didn't have to pay them any money. It's all free. And when I had no money, they were there for me and I could go into that library. So maybe I should thank the library services, which are struggling, but yeah.
So what is the worst piece of advice you have ever been given?
Whoa.
Tough question.
I know. Oh, the worst piece of advice I've ever been given. Don't stick at anything if it's not what you really want to do. I've had a lot of people say, oh, just get your head down and do it. It'll be worth it. But if you're really unhappy, you can find a different way, you know. Trying to conform, I think my own advice to myself has probably been the worst advice, because I used to tell myself, you know, just conform to it, or, you know, keep your head down, or don't let everyone see that you might be a little bit different or a little bit kooky, or don't even say that you don't have GCSEs, because as soon as you say you've got no GCSEs or A-levels, they'll think you're thick and stupid, which I know is a thing. People make assumptions about people if they don't have education, and those assumptions are really toxic, because you don't know where someone's going in life. So I've probably actually been my own person giving myself really bad advice for years, and I've stopped doing that now. So, yeah, don't listen to those negative thoughts in your head. If you have negative thoughts in your head saying, oh, maybe I shouldn't, or I'll have to do this because if I don't do this, that won't happen. Just get rid of that negative voice. It's not doing you any favours. Do what you love and your confidence will grow because you're doing something that you love. And if you love something, you're naturally good at it. So I would say, yeah, probably I was giving myself really bad advice and I've stopped doing that now.
Good.
She says. We'll see.
Is there any like discrimination or like voices from the outside telling you that you're different or saying that you haven't done a GCSE? So is there any voices saying those kind of stuff, making you feel like telling you bad advice?
I think, to be honest, because I don't really talk about it much, most people don't even think I wouldn't have them. I don't know if it's because I've got this really weird posh voice, which is just totally invented, by the way. I watched a lot of Pride and Prejudice. I'm actually from Sheffield. I'm Northern. I've just lost my accent. And I watched a lot of Pride and Prejudice as a child, and my mum said, watch that and you'll have a lovely accent and it'll get you far. And obviously, I managed just to fool everybody. But no, there is always going to be stigma against people that don't have this grade, this mark, this university, the cap and gown. Like, I'm so excited about my graduation ceremony. I've literally rented my gown for an extra week and I'm going to pose in it around like Bristol, around Gloucester. I don't care. I'm going to treat myself to the biggest party ever because I never thought I'd get there. And it means a lot to me. But to other people, university, it doesn't really mean anything. It's the rite of passage. They've been in education their whole lives. They go to university and then they're like, right now what? And to them, it's not like a big deal. But to me, it's a huge deal. So, and all the other mature students in our course, we were so like excited because we never thought we'd get that chance. So all of us, we are so giddy. And I think it's because we didn't have the initial chance. So again, it's good for second chances. Like, never give up. Don't give up. It's my final message. Don't give up, everybody.
Rachel, you've been an absolute star. And thank you for spilling the tea with us here at the Spill the Tea podcast. This podcast is brought to you by the Cheltenham Education Partnership, and it's been fantastic to work alongside our partner secondary schools to get to know our surrounding professionals even more.
Tune in to our next podcast where we have even more exciting guests to bear all with you. Thanks for listening, and we can't wait for next time where, as usual, we promise to
spill the tea.
Today's Spill the Tea podcast was brought to you by the Cheltenham Educational Partnership.